live as they want to be from California, here's Sean and Jen.
So on a scale of Scott Weiland to Jim Morrison, how stoned are you right now?
Oh, I'm not anymore, but earlier... Well, which end is which end of the spectrum with those two? I'm not sure how to rate it.
Well, I think the real challenge might be figuring out all the points in between, and our music's about to come back, so we don't have time for that. Welcome to Hyper Nonsense. We are the podcast that comes to you straight from the heart of California. So to explain a little more about her physical condition, here's Jen.
Yeah, okay, so the asking me about how high I was is in relation to Benadryl, because when I woke up today, my skin was itching. Don't know why. This
Totes
kind of stuff
normal.
Just totally happens to me, so I figured, all right, I'll wait a little bit and see what happens, and yeah. You know, I tried to figure out, well, I haven't eaten anything yet, so it's not that. And I hadn't taken a shower yet, so it wasn't like I used a new soap or something. And I don't have any soap here that is new to me. It's all stuff I've used many times before. So it wasn't that. And I just kind of went, okay, it's that kind of day. And waited to see if it would go away, and it didn't. And so I took half a Benadryl just to kind of make the itchiness go away. And that seemed to work out.
Okay, but you feel like you're mostly... back to quote unquote normal.
Oh
now.
Yeah. I took half a Benadryl. It lasts roughly 6 hours, depending. Sometimes it'll hit me harder than other times, and it's been way more than 6 hours since I took it, so I'm fine.
Okay, so that's been Jen's health update.
Yeah.
Which is a fine segue into perhaps the first thing that we were going to talk about today on our list of show topics, and so. I don't really know where to start with this, except to start sort of at the beginning. Before we had relaunched the show earlier in the year, Jen had applied for Social Security disability benefits. So why don't you explain a little more about why you're doing that?
Okay, well, I'm doing that because I'm basically disabled. I wake up and I'm itching and I need medication. This is not a normal situation, and it's happened before. I get sick going outside in crowds if the pollen's too high, if there's smoke, if it's humidity, I'm wheezing, you know, on and on and on. Those of you that know me have known me for a while, either through podcasting or through Twitter, you see me complain about my health all the time. In addition to that, I've got several other chronic illnesses going on. I've got borderline anemia, and I probably have rheumatoid arthritis as well, but I don't have that confirmed just yet. And a million food allergies, so I cannot safely eat anywhere, you know, is kind of how it goes. And this restricts me in a number of ways. Well, if you can't go outside and stay healthy, it makes it really hard to do things like, oh, you know, work outside of your house or get groceries or any of these lovely things, you know. It's really limiting. I'm also perpetually exhausted, and I have been like this since I was 17 that I know of. It may have been earlier, but I'm certain by that point I was... exhausted enough where I was missing school a lot. Like I was maybe making 3 days a week of school, you know. This is not normal. And somehow I've managed to not only get through school and to get through college, but to work outside of my home for many, many years. And I was sick all the time. All the time. I had sinus infections or bronchitis at least twice a year, and that's optimistic. It was probably more than that. And this is my life. Okay. Well, now I'm in my 40s and I figure I'm not going to outgrow any of those allergies now that I'm in my 40s. That doesn't tend to happen. And in the last couple of years, things have gotten more physically difficult than they have been when I was younger, which happens when you're 40 anyway, even if you're healthy, which I'm not. So I finally decided that perhaps it might be a good idea to get Social Security disability benefits because I am limited in a way that most people aren't. Does that
right.
explain it pretty
it
well
does.
As far as the reason?
And I want to mention this, that over the years, you and I have tossed this out on occasion. Like, would you qualify for benefits. And, you know, people who are hearing this should understand, and I suspect most do, but I'm thinking maybe more for those who are outside the U.S., that you can't, you don't just get to have disability benefits because you want them. You have to qualify them, and it does qualify for them. And it doesn't matter really what your condition is. You have to go through a process. Now, I'm legally blind, and I have been since birth, so I do receive these disability benefits for that reason. But even still, you know, there was a qualifying process I had to go through to get those, and that's just what everybody has to go through. You could walk into your local Social Security Administration office and be obviously disabled. You know, you could walk in and put your, you know, throw your prosthetic leg up on the counter, and you're still going to have to apply, and you're going to have to go through multiple steps of evaluations and all this kind of stuff. And really what brought this on is we have a couple of friends who we've known almost for as long as we've lived out here. And
really
over the years of them seeing Jen, you know, and experiencing her conditions firsthand, they were the ones who really, it was last year, who said, look, you've got a lot to gain and really very little to lose by applying, because there's really no, you know, it doesn't cost anything to apply. It takes a lot of your time and perhaps a little bit of your resources, but there's not, say, an application fee.
Right, right.
And last year they kept bringing it up, and finally, earlier this year,
I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to believe that I actually needed this now. You know, it's hard to kind of come to the conclusion that, you know, you think, oh, I'll be better tomorrow. You know, no, I'm not going to be, you know, and like things like household chores, I have to break them into steps, and then I'm wheezing and I'm sitting down, and no amount of medication changes this. It just is. And it's, you know, I didn't really want to be in the mindset of, okay, I really do need some help, you know?
Yeah, there's that. And
also, I have a big distrust of the government.
Well, and that
when it comes
too
to things like, you know, supplemental financial aid, let's say, in various capacities, I do not trust the government to do what it is supposed to do. And I base this on my experience with unemployment, which is completely different, but that's kind of where it's coming from.
Well, it's different in the sense that it's a different organization with different qualifiers.
Right, exactly. But that was extraordinarily frustrating.
Any time that you're, I mean, this is true under any case. I mean, if you're working, you can be working for, you know, the same company for years upon years, and one day they can just let you go. I mean, that's the nature of
anything.
But my point here is to say that anytime you're relying on government benefits, they can either cut you off completely or drastically change or reduce the benefits that you get. And they can just, this is one of those great, mystifying, frustrating things about how the government does things, because when it comes to, say, cutting your benefits, they can do it in no time flat. And there are processes you can go through to appeal those decisions, try to get them overturned, but usually those take months and sometimes years. And in the meantime, you're probably going to be left with some hole in your income that you can't just immediately go and recuperate. And certainly in our case, we actually experienced this firsthand back in 2006 when the Social Security Administration severely screwed with my benefits. And in a lot of ways, financially, we never recovered from that. So it's kind of like it's good, but it's also bad. And in a world where you can live and not have to rely on something like disability benefits, then that's the way that you should go. But that's not going to work for everyone. And that's why we have this system. So it's not the best thing in the world, but it's something. And it's at least my belief that if you do genuinely qualify for these types of benefits, then you should receive them. So we talked it over, and because of everything that we kind of already touched on in earlier episodes that happened with me towards the end of last year and going to this year, where, you know, suddenly I was unemployed and I just kind of felt like, okay, well, right now for you to apply, the big thing is it's just a matter of time and you have to fill out this big long application. So
we did.
We've got, you know, with the situation we're in right now, we've got the time. Let's just go ahead and do it and kind of, you know, I'm very much right now in a lot of ways, I'm in this mindset of I want to try to get a lot of things that have just kind of been sort of bubbling under the surface for a while. I want to get them done. It's part of the reason why, for all the trouble it's probably going to cause me, I also went and applied for our LLC because it's one of those things we've been talking about doing for years. And I just felt like I don't want to procrastinate on this any longer. I just want to do it. And this was one of those things, too, with the disability. So we did the initial application.
Right. And so you do the application. And,
yeah, you can do that online, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. And Sean helped me with it because I'm dyslexic and I can't get the numbers straight. So,
so
it'd be good to have it accurate.
We did that.
That
and
just seems reasonable.
The next thing was
they sent forms to my doctors.
Yeah, they did
to
that.
To fill out, and so they sent them back, I assume. I know one did, the other one, I assume. So, anyway.
They did that, and the other thing is that they sent out a form where they asked for a rundown of Jen's income going back to 2010. And the reason they do this is your disability benefits are based on income that you've actually made, unless you have no discernible income, then they can, if you've never been married, base your income off of your parents. So, or base your disability benefits off your parents' income.
Yeah, but that's just not a good situation at all because my parents are not in California. So it's just, you know, it's a whole other state. When you switch states,
well,
it's a different, it's a different disability system, you know?
No. You're all wrong because the Social Security disability system is federal. It's got nothing to do
well, either way,
with the states
I'd
where
really,
you live.
Really rather not have my parents involved in any
well,
way.
Well, and you have a work history.
I do.
So.
I started when I was 15, and I was working outside of the home until 2009 when I got laid off, when all the other teachers got laid off.
You don't have anything to be concerned there. I'm putting this out there for people that maybe don't have any direct experience so that they understand, well, why would they want to have this document of Jen's income? Well, it's because if she does get benefits, they're likely to base that amount on that information. So we filled that out, and that was back in, I want to say, because we did the initial application in April, so I think maybe it was back in May that we filled out the income thing, May or June.
Mm-hmm.
And then last month, we get a letter. It was right after we got back from Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
We get a letter saying that you've been scheduled for a medical evaluation, and we had every expectation that this would happen.
Right. And somewhere before this, we actually faxed them copies of some of my medical records that show, like, allergy testing and things of that nature. So they have that, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we sent those in with some other documents, and so we get this letter that says you've been scheduled for a medical evaluation. And it was on August the 10th, which
right.
This was back in July. So I just went, okay, it's next month. Mm-hmm. No problem.
Right. And they assign you a doctor. They assign you a time. The doctor is obviously wherever that doctor is located. And you do get this form that just says, here's where you're going.
And
hope your schedule fits it.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I mean,
even
that's
say,
kind of where it goes.
They even say in the letter that if your appointment is on a Saturday or Sunday, don't worry, this is normal.
And we learned that the reason is the doctors who are doing the evaluation for disability have their own normal schedule during the week, you know? So the ones that are doing it that are able to do this, they have to do it on the weekends.
And sure enough, I was kind of surprised once it finally became August and I was looking at the schedule that, in fact, your appointment was on a Sunday. So we had to call. Well, you had to call.
Right, had to call and confirm and say, you know, okay, this is what I'm calling about. This is my name. I'm confirming my appointment. And the woman I spoke to on the phone was like, okay, great, cool. And I'm like, okay, can you tell me anything about what it's going to be? Like what they're going to do, you know? And we've gotten on the paperwork. It said that this is for this appointment is for evaluation for disability only. They are not going to treat you for anything.
Yeah.
And they are not going to prescribe anything. They are not going to recommend you to a specialist. They're, you know, they are only here for that purpose. This is not like when you go to your doctor for whatever ails you, you know, they're not doing that. They're only doing disability. So I kind of wondered, well, what are you doing? You know, what are you checking? And they told me really fast, they're going to test height and weight. They're going to do an eye exam. They're going to do blood pressure and an aspiration test. And I thought, okay, fine. You know, that's cool. Got off the phone with the lady. And an aspiration test I've had before. They actually had me back when I was diagnosed with allergies. And they figured out that the asthma is connected to that as well. They had me blow into something that looks like an inhaler but isn't an inhaler. And the way you do that, it determines something about how much your lung capacity is or something like that. So I was expecting that. That's not what happened, but that's what I was thinking. And that was basically it. She was very abrupt because I think she probably gets a lot of these types of calls, you know? And so I'd officially confirmed, okay, yes, I'm going to be there.
Right. So we did that and... You know, it was funny. Well, that was back in July when you confirmed that appointment.
Right.
And then earlier, well, last week, actually, we got a letter to, again, to confirm your appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of remind you to say, hey, this is your reminder. And then finally, the day before, we got another call.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that they have a big problem with these kind of appointments of people not showing up for whatever reason.
Right.
But it's funny to me how hard they try to make you, you know, make sure that they've notified you of the appointment. And I'm sure that some of this is so they have that paper trail where if you don't come to the appointment, because what'll happen is if you don't come to the appointment and you don't make an honest effort to reschedule, they'll make a decision
based on whatever you've already sent them and nothing
right.
more.
Right. Well, based on whatever evidence they have, you know, excluding that evaluation. And I suppose in some cases it may be possible that they may still rule in your favor, but the likelihood will be low. And then if it goes to appeal,
then they can say, well, why didn't you go to your appointment?
Right. They can go, well, we...
You were told three times. Right, we documents on
exactly.
it, you know. So that's kind of what that is. I feel that this is a pretty good example of setting you up to fail, you know.
Well...
I mean, all you got to do is just do it if you're able. But what if I was working a part-time job and didn't know what my schedule would be that day yet, you know?
Yeah.
Or what if I had kids and didn't get childcare? I mean, you know.
That is true, and... I think in their defense, by scheduling a lot of these on weekends, they're giving you, in some cases, and obviously everyone's situation is different, they're giving you a little more flexibility because there's probably an assumption for most people that you're going to have more resources available on a weekend as far as, well, if you yourself are working in whatever capacity, there's a better chance than not that you'll have a weekend free from work. And if you need to secure childcare, it'll probably be easier for you to find someone to watch your kids. Now, one of the things that the letter said, that the first letter you got, I don't remember the exact wording, but it was more or less, when you come to the appointment, don't bring a whole bunch of people with you.
Yeah. I don't remember the exact wording either, but it was something like, you know, you yourself should come. Don't bring anyone else. Our waiting room is extremely small, and that's why we're restricting this. But just you, nobody else, kind of thing, you know?
And in our case, you know, Jen wasn't going to come with anybody other than me. So,
right. I mean, we don't have kids. So.
Yeah, we don't, you know, there wasn't any concern there. And I understand probably what they're trying to go for with that. And, you know, they are trying to make sure that if you are someone, you know, if you are a parent, that you don't come with two kids in tow. Because there's going to be a point when there's not necessarily going to be anyone to watch your kids. And if it is a busy day and they don't have a large waiting room, they're going to be, it's just going to be full of people and it's going to be a mess. And mm-hmm. I was fully planning when we went to have some, you know, plan of, okay, well, I'm going to walk you to the office and then hopefully there's going to be somewhere nearby where I can sit if I need to and just wait for you.
Right. But when we got to the door, taped on the door, it said you could have one person come with you. Yeah. And one was in all caps and underlined. One person. I'm like, okay, you're my one person. Cool. This works, you know?
So we went into this office and as it turned out, there was barely anyone there. So
there was hardly anyone there. Yeah. There was a nurse behind the counter, and there was a woman standing at the counter who I presume was here for the same reason I was. And one of the things they told us to do was to bring a list of all of your medications. Okay. No problem. So I had that list all set. You know, the only thing I forgot to put was birth control, because I don't feel like that's, you know, that's not something I'm using to help with my allergies or asthma or anemia or anything else. So I wrote it on the sheet afterwards. I go, okay, this one, you know, that's there too. But the rest I had all set up, right? So I came and I kind of stood by the counter, and this other woman was standing there, and she was talking about, like, I wasn't trying to listen, but the room was so small that you had no option, really. And she said something like, well, I've got this Z-Pak thing. I don't know what else you need. And I don't really know what that is. And okay, Z-Pak is a short form for azithromycin, which is an antibiotic. And they tend to give it to you when you have a sinus infection or bronchitis, if you are weak enough where your body cannot fight it off. I know, because I use it all the time. Okay. Yeah. So that's what she was on. And so she was still standing at the counter because the nurse behind the counter apparently didn't give her enough clarity as to what to do next. So eventually the nurse says to her, can you move so she can sign in, and points at me. And I'm like, okay, you know, and it was a large counter. I mean, I could have stood near her and had the clipboard handed over or something, but that's how she did things. So that's what we did. And the lady went and sat down. And so I went and signed in. And I said, here, I have my list of medications. Let me write the birth control on there, and, you know, handed that to her. And she was like, okay, you know, and Sean went and sat down, and I went and sat next to him and just waited a minute to see what was next. But, you know, now this tells me I am in a room with someone who has a sinus infection.
Yeah,
never. Because that's what they give it to you sign. For. They don't generally give it for other stuff, as far as I know. So if I'm in a room with someone with a sinus infection, I'm going to end up with a sinus infection, unless it turns into bronchitis. And I'll have a respiratory thing now, and I'm fighting one.
In my attempt to be really efficient with my time, figuring I don't know how long I'm going to be there waiting for you, you know, I had brought something to occupy my time, so I just kind of broke into that and started in on it, and that's kind of where my story ends.
Right, so from there, eventually the nurse calls me back. And so I get up and go over, and I start walking around the counter and down a little hallway. Well, I only get about two or three steps down the hallway, it seems. And there's a little piece of blue tape on the floorboard. And she's like, okay, stop there so your toes are there. And I stop there, and I look up, and down the hallway is an eye chart. And I'm like, okay, that's how they're doing this, you know? Now, I wear glasses. So she had me cover one eye and try to read the eye chart, and then cover the other eye and do the same. And then she had me take my glasses off and do the same things. And I can't see the eye chart without my glasses on, right? And she's holding up fingers going, how many fingers am I holding up? I'm like, I can't see it. That's why I have glasses, you know? Mm-hmm. But that's what they were evaluating. And I thought it was kind of weird because I wasn't here for anything, you know, visual. My eyes are okay with my glasses on. I have them. They're only 6 months old. See? But they had to do this anyway, you know? So they did. And then she brought me into one of the little rooms off to the side of the hallway, and she did blood pressure test, you know, or check. And instead of sticking on my arm, you know how they put those cuffs around your arm?
Yeah.
Well, she had one for the wrist. So she put it on my wrist and said, okay, that should be fine. Press the buttons and waited, and nothing happened. And I'm going, I've killed the machine. You know, oh no. And she looked at it and she's like, is it saying it's low? I'm like, I don't know. And she went and looked at it, and the screen was absolutely blank. And she pulled it off my arm, and then it said low. And I'm like, I've drained the machine. It's not cool, you know? So she went and like grabbed another battery or something and stuck it on. And then the thing worked. And my blood pressure is always absolutely fine. It's the only consistent thing about me physically. Yeah, so yeah. So it came out fine. And then she did a, what did she do? Some kind of, it was an aspiration test, but how she did this was she like put a stethoscope on my chest, and then she put her hand sort of on my back, sort of on the back of my rib cage, and said, breathe. And that was it.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, well, last time I did it, it was this, you know, I had this inhaler type thing to blow in, and she said, do you have COPD? I said, I don't think so, but maybe that's what they were checking. I don't know. You know? So at this point I'm like, it's, I don't know, you know, this nurse seems not entirely thrilled to be here on a weekend.
Yeah.
You know? And I was talking to her and I was like, you know, thank you for seeing me on the weekend. I know that's not easy. And she said, well, it's the doctor's schedules. And I'm like, okay. I mean, she wasn't being mean to me or anything, but it was just kind of strange, you know?
Yeah.
And then she had me take my shoes off and put my purse down, and I took off my jacket. And she walked me over to one of those scales, you know?
Yeah.
And at this point, she's doing the whole thing, you know? Okay, so now we're going to take our shoes off, and we're going to put our purse down, and we're going to walk over here. And I'm like, okay, I've got the royal we going now. This is entertaining, you know? And so the scale is against a wall, and, you know, it's a scale. So when you stand on it, it sort of moves a little bit. And she says, okay, so we're going to stand on the scale very slowly, and we're going to use our hands to touch the wall for balance right here and right here. Okay, so I do that. And then she says, okay, now we're going to put our hands down. So I do that, and she checked my height and my weight. And then she asked me how tall I was. And I said, 5'3", and she said, yeah. I'm like, I've been this way since I was 12. It hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. You know, my height is not going to change. And then I asked her, you know, how much do I weigh? And she went and checked it out, and she said, oh, looks like 181. And I'm like, well, I've lost 4 pounds. And she kind of looked at me funny because I don't look like I weigh that much.
Yeah.
But I do, you know? So I don't know what she made of that. And she's giving me no indication because she's just doing, you know, the vitals. And then she sent me back out to the waiting room again.
Yeah, so you then obviously had to wait for, it wasn't really that long.
No, it wasn't very long at all. It was like a couple minutes or so.
And then you got called back.
Right, the doctor called me back this time. And I forgot her name. She's a chiropractor. And she had a very German accent. And she was really nice. Like, I was expecting that I would see a doctor that's like, oh my God, I have to be here evaluating. This is my weekend. I don't want to do this. But she was really nice. She was extremely nice to me. And so she brought me back to a room and had me sit down. And there was a table in front of me that obviously you would use for like chiropractic or something. And it was low and you lay on it and all that. It's kind of padded. She's a chiropractor. I don't think this was her office, but it was what she chose. And she was using that as a desk, and she had a clipboard. And she's like, so, and she's going down all of my list of medications. And what is this? And what is this? And we're going through all of those things, you know, and she asked if, you know, how often do you use this and that? And, you know, I had it listed, but I repeated that for her. And you know, that seemed pretty standard. And she's making all these notes. And she says, okay, well, what about your allergies? Tell me about your allergies. And I'm like, okay, do you want the environmental ones or the food ones or the contact ones? Which would you like first? And she just sort of blinked at me for a couple minutes or a couple seconds. She went, okay, how about environmental? I'm like, okay. So I rattled off all of those as much as I could think of. And she's sitting here writing and writing and writing. And as I keep going, you can see her looking at the clipboard like, oh my God, you know? And I'm like, well, okay, you know? And then she wanted to know the contact allergies, which, you know, caused me to break out in a rash and or hives, depending on what I've encountered and for how long. So I went over those. And then I said, well, do you want any of the food allergies? And she said, well, no, I don't think we need those. And I said, well, I have 3 that'll put me into anaphylaxis. She said, okay, what are those? You know, just kind of went through the list. She didn't even get all of my food allergies, but she got a few. I don't think I mentioned the gluten allergy, but whatever. You know, I have enough allergies that this doctor was surprised, and she didn't even hear all of them. Mm-hmm. So there we are with that. She asked, what runs in your family? You know, well, so I'm like, let's see. My dad has high blood pressure and I didn't. I mean, that was obvious, you know, and you know, allergies run. And then I was like, oh, arthritis, that too. And, you know, I said that, my family has rheumatoid arthritis. Many of them have it. They start feeling symptoms when they're 30. And she asked again, how old are you? And I said, 41. So she's like, writing that down. And so she did that. And she did a couple of like, she had me stand up and do a couple of like mobility tests, you know, like, I think it was, okay, march in place really slow. So I did that. And then she said, now close your eyes and do it. And I don't know that I was totally straight doing that. because you know, you're off balance when your allergies suck, you know? Right. And then she had me do, pretend you're going to touch your toes like this. And so she did that. And so I did it and I was kind of stiff. So I was probably slow. I don't know. That's just how it was. And she said, you know, cross your arms like an X, you know, and touch your shoulders. And that's hard because my shoulders hurt now from, they just hurt all the time. I think it's one of the arthritis things.
Yeah.
And so she could kind of tell that I was in pain with that one, I think, you know. So we did a few of those things and she had me sit on the little table and she got one of those little hammers where they hit your knee. You know?
Oh yeah.
So she did those and she also did my wrist and my elbow, which I've never had done. I don't know what that tells you. I don't know what that tells you at all. You know, I have no idea. So there was that. And then she had me sit down, in the chair again, I think, and was asking me, things like, I think this had to do with physical limitation kind of things. You know, I think these questions were that. So the first question she asked me is, can you dress yourself and take a shower? Okay. And I'm thinking, this is the key question, isn't it? You know, this is the one, because if you're here faking, you're not going to say that you can't dress yourself and you can't take a shower because there's so much stigma on that. You know, I mean, you might say it, but you know, this is a stranger. You want to impress because of, you know, her evaluation. She does not make a decision for disability. And she had to say that first. She made it very clear. She doesn't work for them. Her decision, she's not the decision maker. She's just doing the evaluation. You know, made that clear. I think they have to. But even so, even though you know that, I think going in, you know, you kind of want to impress this person. So you really don't want to say, you know, it's hard for me to take a shower if it isn't, you know? So, you know, I told her I can dress myself and she looked at my outfit and nothing has snaps or buttons. And I'm like, oh God, I just signaled how bad my arthritis is, you know, without knowing it, because buttons would be difficult at this point. Honestly, you know, I don't really reveal this much all the time, but that's where we're at, people. So that's why I'm doing this thing for disability. You know, there are days where my hands just ache. I just wake up this way. They stay this way. There we are. So, yeah. So she noticed I'm wearing like clothing that you would wear if you had trouble because of arthritis, you know. And then she asked if I could take a shower. And to be honest, I can't always anymore. Yeah. There was a time when I could. And in the last couple of years, it's harder and harder for me to have the energy to stand up that long. You know, I mean, it sounds pathetic, but it's true.
Yeah.
You know, and I have, I've read a lot of things online from like, okay, on Tumblr, there's a few people I follow and I don't know them personally, but they have chronic illnesses that are nothing like mine. And everybody finds when the one thing everybody's got in common is this, you know, there's like a little meme going around. This is something like, you know, when, you know, chronic illness, when taking a shower feels like you've run a marathon, you know, and that's how it is. Like I'll have to sit down afterwards. I might be winded because of the humidity, you know, I mean, it's just awful. So I mean, it's kind of like, well, I wait until I can and then I do, you know?
Yeah.
And I've not always been like this. It is the last couple of years, you know, where it's been really obvious when I think the arthritis is kicking in, you know? So I told her that. She wrote it down. She asked if, she started to go into like the household chore kind of things, you know? And so she asked, can you sweep the floor? And I said, I can sweep the floor, but I can't really, like, I can sweep it into kind of, maybe sort of sweep it into a dustpan. I can sweep it into a pile, but to put it in a dustpan, I'm kind of like mimicking like how you do that. You know, then my face is right by the dust. So I'm going to get sick. And she went, oh, okay, wrote it down. She asked if I can mop the floor. I said, sometimes it depends on how much energy I have. And honestly, these are true. I'm not faking it. You know, this is life. She asked if I could do dishes. Yeah, I can do dishes. Okay. She asked if I cook. I'm like, well, my husband's a better cook, so not really, you know, because it's true. And I think mostly she was asking if, she said, how about frying? Do you fry foods or do you avoid frying foods? I'm like, we don't really fry foods. No. And part of the reason is because I'm allergic to gluten and everything you want to fry is covered in bread.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But we just don't anyway. So I told her that. And there was another one. Oh, she said, what about vacuuming? Can you vacuum? And I said, well, we don't have carpets because carpets are dust catchers. So there's no way I could vacuum and expect to be well. I will start coughing like shortly thereafter. Yeah. And, you know, and I told her, like, this tiny little room we're in, if I were to start vacuuming your carpet, I would be sick right away. I'd be coughing and wheezing right away. And so she wrote that down. And she asked if I can do other chores. And I say, I can, but like, I have to take breaks. You know, like most people, I think, can go and clean their bathroom and have the whole thing done in a couple minutes or 10 minutes or a half an hour if they haven't in a while, I guess. I don't know, an hour. I can't do that. I have to, like, I could do the sinks and then I have to stop and see if I have energy to continue. And if I don't, then I pick up the next day with whatever's next, you know?
Yeah.
And I've been like this for years, you know? So I'd let her know that. She wanted to know, like, I told her a lot of the scented things. She said, like, what about shopping? She said, what about shopping? Can you shop? And I said, well, not really, you know? And I told her, like, okay, grocery shopping is hard because the stores all have a floral department. So I have to go through that. And it's all through the store. You can't avoid it. So I am sick every single time we go grocery shopping. I have to, like, recover after that, which is true. This has been true forever, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't have the energy anymore to fight it as much as I did when I was, you know, 20 something, you know? So she asked that, and I said, in other shopping, you know, you have to worry about there being scented things in there. And I told her how I have a pine allergy, which can, you know, which can kill me, you know, pine nuts can kill me. You know, spreads with pine nuts in them can kill me. Salads with pine nuts in them can kill me for two reasons. 'Cause I can't eat the lettuce either, but, you know, you know, these kinds of things. And, you know, on the way out the door, she was done evaluating me. On the way out, she said, you know, what happens if let's say somebody cleaned this room? Because I told her I can't be like, if someone cleans with pine salt, that's enough to set me off. I will be really sick. I'll be wheezing. I'll be coughing. I'll be sneezing. It's enough to scare people. And she, on the way out, she went, oh, what if someone cleaned this room with like pine, with a pine cleaner? What would happen to you? And I said, oh, on the way in, I'd be coughing really badly. It would be obvious. Mm-hmm. She went, okay. And she wrote that down and she gave me a big smile and she said, good luck, you know?
Yeah.
So I think this doctor believes me at the very least, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that key question was probably the taking a shower one.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is such a stigma of, you know, oh, you didn't take a shower, you know? And it's, I mean, it is, you know? And a lot of people would be too embarrassed to admit that to a stranger, even a doctor that's evaluating them. And here I'm admitting it to all of you. So enjoy. but that's the reality of it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. And so the next thing is she sends her evaluation to whomever, the powers that be within this whole chain of events. And we wait.
Yeah, I think that what'll happen now is there's an... I think they call it an analyst that is kind of in charge of Jen's case, and they're going to get this evaluation, and then they're going to, if they don't yet have enough information, they're going to have Jen come in for a face-to-face interview with someone actually at Social Security.
Right. But that's if they don't think they have enough info, right?
Well, if they, yeah, if they don't think they have enough information to either, well, honestly, if they don't have enough information to deny you, if they have, if they don't yet have enough information to deny you.
Well, I don't think they have that. After then, this evaluation, I think it'd be very hard for them to make that case.
Then they will have you come in for face-to-face. I doubt that if they had enough information so far to approve you, for lack of a better term here, that they would just approve you. I think that you're not going to get that approval until you actually speak to someone.
Right. And sometimes after that, we've been hearing that they turn you down anyway. Like your first round through it, they're going to turn you down. It does not matter what's going on with you. If you actually do deserve it, if you qualify, none of that doesn't matter. They're going to turn you down anyway. Because the hope is that you won't go through it again and you won't end up qualifying and you won't end up getting the financial aid you need because right. you're disabled. And if you think about it, that's a really shitty thing to do with a group of people who already are having physical issues, movement issues, health issues with breathing and digestion and all of that, which we went into that too, actually. And, that have issues with energy that are exhausted all the time, you know? I mean, that's a really crappy thing to do to people who, you know, kind of have to struggle just to get to the doctor, you know?
Yeah.
To just automatically say, well, it doesn't matter. You know, we're just playing a game here. So run them through this. And if, you know, the first step was making that appointment where you don't get to choose when or where. And maybe it doesn't fit your schedule. And so they don't have to do anything for you. Oops, you missed it. Darn, you're disapproved. You're rejected, you know? And then you go through the evaluation and then they can kind of say, well, you know, they showed up and the doctor thinks, yep, this one qualifies. So let's see if we can find another loophole to make them not. You know, that's what they're doing. This is what they're doing.
The fundamental problem that I see with all of these aid systems, whether it's unemployment insurance or disability insurance through Social Security, what have you, they all operate under that notion of insurance. And insurance of all kinds exists with two guiding principles. The first one is get the money in and don't let it go out. And ultimately, that's why these things like what you're going through take a long time. There's no guarantees, and they're going to make you jump through a bunch of hoops. Probably they're going to deny you, make you appeal, all this kind of stuff, because ultimately it's insurance. And that, I'm not saying that makes any of it right, because that's not how I feel, but it's the way that these things are all set up.
Well, it's also set up, they automatically assume that you are a liar.
Yeah.
They completely assume that you are a complete and utter liar and you want to stay home and eat bonbons and, you know, play video games. And that's why you're doing this, well, you know?
Another thing to consider is, I mean, again, this is all relative to your own income as far as what you can actually earn through something like disability benefits. But in Jen's case, because of what they're going to base it on, it isn't like she's going to be, you know, set for life.
Oh, God, no. No. This might help pay for groceries, you know?
It will help because our financial situation is so, well, lousy right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't like it's going to be a huge sum of money. And I understand that in some cases, for other people, that's going to be different because, you know, other people have had careers with jobs that have paid a living wage and they're obviously going to get more money.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
In our case, you and I, that's really never been the case. So it's not, again, it's not like, oh, well, like you said, you know, you're just going to be, sitting on the couch all day watching Maury reruns or whatever,
which we didn't
have cable.
So that's not even going to
But that's, I think with so many of these systems, anything in this country that's designed to kind of help you when you're down, there's this baseline assumption that you are fraudulent in your need, so we have to go through all these steps. And I mean, we didn't really talk about this on the show because actually the show started after this kind of came and went, but earlier this year, I applied for food stamps because I looked at all of the possible state assistance programs we might qualify for. And there was a chance in hell, even with the limited income that we have, that we might have been able to get food stamps. Everything else was completely off the table, not going to be possible. But food stamps seemed like there might be a chance. So I applied for them. And one of the things I had to do was I had to go to the local social services office and meet with a caseworker there. And the first thing they did after she brought me into her office was she made me watch this video that was probably, I don't know, 20 to 30 minutes long. And the video was constantly reiterating, these are all the things that you're responsible for doing and notifying us, or you could either, you know, it could run the range from if you, you know, if someone moves into your house and you don't tell us, or if someone moves out of your house and you don't tell us, or if your income, you know, the income profile of your home changes and you don't tell us, then this could result in everything from, you know, a payback of benefits to, you know, to possible legal action. And they kept reiterating this, and there were all these things that you had to tell them. And again, it's all predicated on their, you know, they're there to help you, but they're really concerned about there not being any chance that you're committing any kind of fraud. And that's not necessarily bad, because it doesn't help any of us when these systems are abused. But on the other side of things, it also is going to make it that much harder for when you actually need the help to get it.
Right. I mean, you're guilty until proven innocent in these, in these situations. Yeah. And the other thing with disability right now, ever since the economy crashed and everybody lost their jobs for a couple of years, some people still haven't bounced back from that, by the way. What was happening is you had a lot of people that got on unemployment because they qualified. Okay. They got laid off. They didn't quit. If you quit, you don't get unemployment. So they got laid off. They had all the paperwork in line. It was obvious, you know, their company closed. Everybody knew, okay, yes, the company has in fact closed, you know, whatever, like free and clear. Yes, you qualify for unemployment insurance benefits. And so they had those, and then they got to the end of their run, however long that was. It varies state by state and other different things, and ran out of that. They didn't qualify for it anymore. And the presumption was, well, anybody that applied for disability after that was doing it because they can't get unemployment and they don't want to work.
Right.
That was the assumption. And that's a horrific thing to think. I mean, you know, that's assuming that every single person in the United States is a liar and is intending to commit fraud in a number of ways all the time. And that's just unrealistic.
Yeah. Well, that's the sad nature of things. And we'll see what happens with Jen's.
Well, we know what's
going to
happen.
Adventure.
I'm going to get denied. Yeah. That's what's going to happen. And then we just kind of take it from there and, you know, hope for the best.
Okay, well, we'll move on from that. And one thing that I want to bring up here, and we alluded to this on our last show, and that is that we talked about how in our last show we had made this video using Boinks TV, and we didn't really want to say yet what the video was for because it hadn't been published, and now it's been published so we can link to it. And I don't know if I've mentioned this yet on the show this year, but earlier this year I began contributing to a website called Podcaster News. So podcasternews.com and your favorite web browser of choice is where you can find that. And it is a blog that focuses on, as the name suggests, podcaster news. So news and newsy items that are relevant to those who make podcasts or are interested in podcasting. It's very, I don't want to say it's inside, but if you're someone who has absolutely no interest in podcasts beyond listening to them, you've never thought about making your own show, you don't care about any of that information, it doesn't appeal to you, it's probably not the thing for you. But if you have an interest in that, you should definitely check it out. And there's originally, I think including myself, there were 6 contributors. And the show was launched, or the website rather, was launched by Todd Cochran, of Raw Voice, Geek News Central, Blueberry, you know, old podcasting fame, Todd Cochran. And I volunteered to write for the site, and he took me on. And there's a couple of things that happened this last month or so. He put out a call for new contributors.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And?
So I decided, why not? Because I've been writing for Geek News Central for a couple of years, so he already knew who I was, you know. We've worked together, essentially. He does assign... Occasionally, you know, he'll throw things out at his group of writers over at Geek News Central and say, okay, guys, somebody write this. And if you want to, you can say, okay, me. You know, so we've kind of communicated back and forth. I've contributed to his site over there for, like, you know, the last couple of years or so. And so I thought, well, you know, why not give this a shot over there? So I pitched him an idea. And I said, you know, I'm interested in contributing to Podcaster News. And, you know, I'm a woman who podcasts. And what I'd like to do is bring news about other women that are involved in podcasting. And the next day I was accepted and was like, here you go. Ta-da. I got a gig. I was really excited.
When the site originally launched, all of us who were on board at the time, we made these introductory posts, including videos. And because Jen was just joining now, we figured we should make one for her. So
that's the video we've been referring to. So it's there. It's over at Podcaster News. And I hate being on video, but I did it anyway because it was important. So I did it. And it's just me saying who I am and, you know, what I'm doing for Podcaster News, you know, kind of thing. And it's not very long. So that's my first contribution to the site. And I've got some things in the works from this point on. So if you are listening to the sound of my voice and you are a woman who podcasts, get in touch with me and maybe you could be interviewed for Podcaster News, too. You can do that at Queen of Haiku on Twitter is the easiest way.
And we'll obviously have a link to the video in the show notes for this episode. So you can look for that on our website, or you can just go to podcasternews.com and look for it there. And to clarify one thing, these interviews that Jen's going to be doing...
Oh, they're audio. Or they're email-based. They're not video.
Yeah, they're not going to be video, but more importantly, most of them will be text blog entries on the website. But one of the things that we're trying to get going over there is an actual podcast that runs through the Podcaster News website. And it's one of those things where we weren't given a lot of hard direction. So it's
just because, you know, Todd Cochran is not a micromanager type of editor.
No.
You know, if he's hired people, he believes they can do it. So you just kind of, it's a collaborative kind of thing, you know?
So we, that is Jen and I, actually recorded the first episode of what we're calling the Podcaster News Show. And that actually went out earlier today. So we'll have a link to that as well. And if you go to the website over there, there are a couple of basic subscription options and they work. So the show isn't officially listed in any directories or anything, but if you're savvy enough to plug in an RSS feed, you can subscribe and get the first episode and presumably episodes that come down the road. Understand that you're only going to hear us every now and then. There's other people that are going to be producing these, so.
Right. So the first one is me and Sean, mostly Sean. I just kind of chime in now and again on that one. I'm going to be doing one. I'm interviewing a woman who podcasts very soon, and we'll have more details about that after it comes out. So that'll be, you know, me and the woman I'm you know, podcasting with and interviewing about podcasts, which gets kind of meta after a while, you know, but it'll work. It'll be really cool. And then everybody else that contributes to Podcaster News is going to come in and do the individual little episodes of whatever they're doing. So it'll be like different hosts every so often.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It'll be kind of interesting. It's like, it's a collaborative podcast. I've never done one like this.
Yeah, it's interesting and it's fun, and we'll see exactly what happens. But one thing I wanted to share is I made intro and outro musics for the show, the Podcaster News Show, and I put out a call on my social media to get a voiceover, and Colin from Ouroboros was kind enough to volunteer. So I just want to play a little bit of the intro song with the voiceover.
It's the Podcast the News show, where the editors of podcasternews.com share their insights on a wide range of podcasting topics.
So there's that, and you know, it's funny with this this intro music. I had another idea when I started writing it and recording it that just wasn't coming together, and I just kind of threw this together, and I actually kind of like it.
Yeah, I think it works well.
Sounds nice.
And a big thank you to Colin for doing the voiceover.
Yeah, yeah, that was very nice of him to volunteer to do that. And, you know, when I listen to this, it almost sounds like, you know, backing music for a commercial that every time I sort of see it in my mind, I think of just, you know, something where it's a bunch of people running out on the beach, you know, either a beer commercial or...
with a Coca-Cola in their hand, yeah. You know?
So that's, and we'll link also, of course, to the first episode where you can go and hear that. And, you know, if you want to get subscribed to the Podcaster News show, then those options are on that website, and you can do that if you care to. Now, the next thing that we want to talk about here is one of those life things that happens to you, and it's kind of like, what the hell? So earlier today, we finally did our grocery shopping for the week. It's Tuesday.
Yeah, we usually try to go during the weekend, but I've been sick, and this is how life goes.
I'm starting to wonder if the keyword for this episode should just be sick.
Yeah, maybe.
Hyperanalysis.com/sick.
Mm-hmm.
So... we went and got our groceries, and I was putting them away, and I had two cans of tuna fish, and I had them stacked one on top of the other, and I was lifting them up to put them into a cabinet, and the cabinets that I was using are actually over our stove. As you can imagine, we don't have a very large kitchen, so storage is kind of weird, and one of the cans slipped. The top one slipped off, and it hit the ground, and it started to roll. Of course, these are round cans. It hit the ground, and it started to roll, and it rolled in such a fashion. I mean, this was perfect in how it happened. If I wanted to, I probably couldn't actually reproduce this. And it rolled in such a fashion, it went towards... our, you know, imagine if you will, if you were standing in our kitchen where roughly I was standing, everything in our kitchen is sort of an L shape where I'm standing in front of the stove, and the stove is almost at where the two parts of the L come together. And I'm standing in front of it. This can drops and it rolls away from me, and then it turns. And it goes under the cabinets that are essentially to my left.
So the other part of the L.
Yeah, the other part of the L. And it's the perfect shape, the can is, as well as the space under the cabinets, the perfect shape where this can just rolls under the cabinet and then in you know, next to and behind the stove. And this is not an arrangement where you can just walk around the side of the stove.
No. It's about the size of a tuna can, and the spacing of it.
And I'm like, that's impossible. There's no way that if I just wanted to do that, I could have done it. So I came and I finished putting the groceries away and I told you about it.
Yeah, you said, well, there's something that's never happened before. And I'm like, oh, God, what? You know? And then you tell me the story. I'm like, that's a new one. Yeah.
So you come back out with me to the kitchen, and your first thought is, and we get the, you got the flashlight out, and you're able to kind of look down this.
Yeah, I'm like laying on the floor crevasse. With the flashlight aimed in that little space, going, where the hell's the tuna can? You know, and I can see it back there, and it's kind of at an angle, and it's sort of like got the top of it. It's on its side, so the top of it is kind of like against sort of the cabinet, and the bottom side is against the stove at the corner of the stove, and it's just right there going, okay, here I am. And you know, if you nudge this thing the wrong way at all, it's going to be behind the stove in a second. Yeah. You know, it's just like, well, now what? You know, it's too far, it's too long, you know, a space for either of us to just reach it and get it.
Impossible.
Yeah.
So your first thought was you grabbed the broom stick.
Right.
The handle, you know, the stick from the broom. The broomstick.
Well, yeah. And I thought maybe if I could get this under there, I could sort of like, you know, get the broom up maybe above the tuna can and try to like knock it back out, maybe. That was kind of my plan.
And my first thought was I've got this set of kind of long barbecue tongs. And my first thought was, well, you know, maybe I can reach back there. One of us can reach back there and just grab it and pull it out. And you tried and you didn't
have... I tried and I don't have the reach. And I had my arm in that space up to my shoulder. And I'm trying to reach this and I can just almost do it. And the problem I'm having is in order to get the tongs to clasp something, you have to be able to press it together. And I don't have the hand strength anymore.
So I take a shot at it, and the thing is that where the way everything is positioned, there's no way that I can reach under there and actually see it.
Right.
So
right.
I just kind of my thinking is my hope is that I'll just get these barbecue tongs back there, and I'll just get really lucky and I'll grab, you know, I'll get the one tong around the side of the can and I'll just grab it. I'll just get lucky, or somehow I'll be able to feel where the thing is. And I get back there and it's not working. So I pull the thing out. And then what happened?
Well, I looked to see, you know, obviously you hadn't retrieved it. So I looked to see what it was. And I'm like, yeah, it's gone. It's behind the stove. Mm-hmm. It's the only space it could have gotten to from that point where it was. So it's now behind the stove. And we're going, well, now what do we do? You know, and you're thinking about just moving the stove, right? And I'm like, well, wait, you know, this is a gas stove, you know, and if you start pulling it, I don't know where the gas is connected or any of those things. Now, if we cause a gas leak, that's obviously not good. We'll probably withstand it enough to like shut things off. But in the meantime, we have, you know, five cockatiels sitting not that far away from the kitchen who will die if there's a gas leak.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you can't just pull the stove out.
So you know, I went online and I was reading about how to disconnect a gas stove.
And in the meantime, I had this idea. You know, we have a shop vac, right? So I'm like, what if, this is just a weird idea, maybe if you get the shop vac back there far enough, you can kind of like get, you know, maybe there's enough suction to get the tuna can and bring it back out, maybe? And that didn't work either.
Yeah. So I'm reading online about how to disconnect a gas stove, and it doesn't really look that difficult, but the thing that's concerning is, as Jen mentioned about the birds, and
if you do this wrong, they're going to die. Like, you know, canary in the mine.
Yeah,
that's the reason that they use canaries. I mean,
I don't know what's going to happen. You know, if I actually manage to pull the stove out, I don't know how long the hose is
going
to be.
See, exactly. So you don't know how far you're going, where you're pulling on that, or breaking it, or disconnecting it in some way, and there's no way to see it the way it's set up.
So I just figure, okay, well, we'll have to leave it for now. The only idea that I have is if we were able to get a powerful enough magnet, we could maybe wrap it onto the end of a stick.
Yeah, but how are we going to, you know, I don't even know where to get one of those.
And, well, we could probably get one at a hardware store or something. It doesn't have to be.
But still, it's like we're now fishing for the tuna can, you know, again. And it's just really ridiculous.
So, ultimately, I feel like, well, it's a metal can. It's really unlikely. I mean, it would take a lot for it to catch on fire, depending on exactly how close it really is to any part of the stove that gets hot.
And we don't know because we can't see it. And but in addition to it being just, you know, a metal can, it's got like a paper wrapper around it.
Yeah.
And if that sucker ignites, it's going to go up the back of the stove into the cabinets and that's it, man.
That
house is over, you know?
Look, this is what I said earlier. We know, thanks to Ray Bradbury, that you need a temperature of 451 degrees Fahrenheit to light paper on fire. And I cook things regularly inside the stove at 450 degrees. But if the stove actually gave off 450 degrees of heat outside of itself, everything would be on fire all the time.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's still kind of, you know, disconcerting.
It's not, it's obviously not the best case scenario. And I'm going to ask a friend of mine who I suspect has a little more experience with this kind of thing, what he thinks.
He's got a friend that knows everything.
And, you know, I'm going to get his advice and see, you know, what he thinks about it. And, you know, one way or another, I mean, either we'll pull the stove out and get this stupid tuna can out, or we'll just leave the tuna can back there forever and it'll be
I don't really want that to happen. I mean, at the very least, he could probably tell you how to shut off the gas properly, you know?
Well, here's the thing about the gas. There's two options. The first one is we pull the stove out. And if we need to disconnect the hose, there will be a valve on the wall. The only other option is you have to turn it off at the main. And I'm not even sure if that's something we're automatically allowed to do. I think we might have to actually call the utility for that.
We probably would, or at least talk to the park manager and see how that rolls. But I don't know. Just talk to your friend and follow his advice because I'm sure he'll figure this out.
But it's one of those things that is just annoying and frustrating, and it's like I said, you couldn't plan, you couldn't do that if you just wanted to. But one thing I know of for sure is I'm going to find something, I don't know what it is yet, maybe it'll just be, I'll find a, you know, some cardboard or something I can fashion into a plug that or something... You know, something. I ought to find something that I can stick down in that space so that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. So I don't know what it'll be because it obviously can't be something that'll catch on fire. So I don't know. But either way, it's annoying. So stay tuned for exciting updates on the mysteriously escaping tuna can.
Yeah. Yep. There it is.
Tuna can of mystery. Tuna can of mystery and intrigue. What will happen? Stay tuned on the further adventures of Electric Man and Undervolt in the saga of the tuna can of mystery and intrigue. So we have a little bit of feedback we wanted to go over, so why don't you read that?
Okay, so the first piece of feedback is a comment from Nathan. And this is in reference to the children's book you were talking about in the last episode.
Pepe Goes North.
Right. So Nathan asks, is it possible that the book you're looking for could be called Penn Goes North? And he also said, so far, this is the closest I've come. He's got a link to a book called Pepe Goes to Alaska. He says it's a very interesting mystery. When you do a Google search for Pepe Goes North, you get your page and a Chinese page. If you Google Translate the Chinese page, it is a homeschooling forum, and one of the poster's kids had read that book. I've looked on worldcat.org, a catalog of the world's libraries, searching for kids' books with the word Pepe in it, and a separate search for the phrase Goes North, plus several out-of-print book sites.
And I did respond to Nathan's comments on the website, but it can't be the book Pepe Goes to Alaska, because the publishing date on that is 2007. And I mean, I was at most 10 years old when I saw that Pepe Goes North book. So clearly that math doesn't work. That was, you know, we were talking mid 80s when I saw this. So
It's a reprint.
I don't think that the two.
I tried looking this up after I saw this comment, and I think this one is about like an iguana character.
Yeah, and really, all I remember of the cover of Pepe Goes North is it was some kind of cartoon character, and I want to say it was some kind of bird, and it was yellowish. You know, the character was yellowish in color, and it had like a red background. And I went on Facebook, and I sent a message to my old friend Ronnie, because he and I were the ones that used to see this book, and we'd laugh over it. And I said, Ronnie, tell me if my memories failed me, do you remember this? And he said, yes, I remember it, but he thinks that it was actually a story inside a book. So it was sort of part of an anthology. Okay. And I said, I don't know, because I seem to remember that it had a cover. And that's, you know, it's just amazing to me that this thing absolutely existed and there's no record of it online. And read this last comment that's here.
Okay.
Under Nathan.
All right. The next comment is from Matt Sams. He says, I totally remember Pepe Goes North. They read it in class. I remember laughing at the pronunciation, and he's written Pee-Pee, which is how you would probably think it was.
That's how you would think it was.
Think if your English is your first language, right, that's what you think. But if Spanish, then no.
So, I mean, I'm not alone in my remembrance of this book, but yet, it's almost impossible to find anything that has virtually disappeared, especially when something's been in print. I mean, if something's existed as media, it's usually somewhere. I mean, I don't necessarily expect that it's going to be in print anymore, but you'd think there would be a record of it somewhere. I mean, this story, whether it was just a story or it was an actual book, it's not like now where I can be a self-publisher. You know, for this to have gotten in a library in a kid's school in the mid-80s, you know, this thing was published. It most likely had an ISBN. I mean, it's just so weird that it's completely disappeared.
Was it possible? Was this inside your, like, classroom reader, like for reading or English class, so to speak? Like one of the stories included in that?
What's weird is, I mean, again, this would have been, for me, fourth, fifth grade. So I would have been 9, 10 years old. And as I stated before, we had this weird thing at our school, because our school district was so small, and they were constant. Don't start searching for it again. You're disallowed.
I was going to look for some of the names I remember of the readers at the time.
Well, we don't need to get all up in this right now.
Okay, I'll do it later.
So, as I stated on the other show, we had this thing in the school I was at the time. And actually, it was in the parlance of my school district, this is where things get a little weird. It was actually called the middle school, because what happened is, they had this one building that had fourth and fifth grade in it, but also kindergarten. It was weird. And
so you said the library had a mix.
So the library had this mixture of you know, books for really young kids, and then stuff that was a little closer in age, and kind of everything in between, and also was a small school district. So they obviously didn't have a lot of resources, so whatever books we had, you know, whatever books we could get is really what we had. So that's why I think that really Pepe Goes North was probably written for a grade that was younger than the one I was in. And it just happened to be in our library because of this weird, you know, alignment that they had of the grades. So I don't think, and I'm trying I guess even at that latest stage, we were probably still reading. You know, I remember that they had these, starting in first grade, they had these, you know, reading literacy, I don't know what you call them, comprehension books, where you would start one, and like there was one, I remember specifically there was one called Rockets, and then there was one, I don't even remember the names of them all, where it would have, you know, stories in it and kind of workbook style things that were geared at a certain level of literacy, and, you know, they would go up in levels, and I was always in the highest one. And I don't remember if they were still doing those in fourth or fifth grade. They might have been in fourth, maybe not in fifth. But I don't think for something that I have in my memory is looking so much like a younger kid's book, that's something I would have been experiencing that late in my schoolings. So I just don't know. It's this weird mystery. I'm almost wondering now if I should call the school, because it's entirely possible that their staff there that were there when I was, you know, when I was going to school there.
Oh, it could be. Yeah.
And just ask them if anyone remembers this book, or if it was a story, and then if perchance, if they might even still have it, because I feel having this confirmation from Ronnie and from Matt, I feel like this thing really existed. So it's probably just going to be something that if I ever see it again, I'm going to find it. Now, every time I go to thrift stores, I'm going to start thumbing through the kids' books, try to look for this stupid thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah. The mystery continues. Now, on a kind of related note, not so much to Pepe, but kind of to listener feedback in general, this is kind of where I feel like we are as far as our iTunes reviews. Where Jen and I are just kind of out here on this desert island. We're just kind of, you know, this is where our podcast is now. We're just out here all alone with nobody else. So we're just going to hang out on our desert island for a while.
And get washed away.
There's no internet on the desert island.
Yeah, obviously.
It seemed like you were starting to type things.
No, wasn't. I probably could. I have time. I'm on a desert island. I can type something.
There's no internet.
It won't work, but I could try.
There's no internet on the desert island.
I know.
What's the official rule at which we can start to resort to cannibalism?
You don't.
It'd be so much more relaxing on this desert island if we were here because we were having a nice vacation at a resort. We're here because we've been cast out and we're lonely.
Aww.
If only people would do things like leave us iTunes reviews by going to hypernonsense.com/iTunes.
I think some have, maybe.
Or perhaps the occasional Stitcher review. Or maybe a nice Twitter at hypernonsense comment that says, "Don't be lonely on a desert island. I'm listening too." But no, we're just stuck out here on a desert island.
I wonder if we're relaxing our listeners or ticking them off at this point. I'm not sure, you know?
The point of the desert island is not for you to be relaxed. So that's not allowed. If you're getting relaxed, if you're getting relaxed right now by the desert island, then this is this will help you with that.
Okay, I think you've made your point.
Don't let us be all alone on a desert island. Please go to hypernonsense.com/iTunes and leave us some reviews. Yeah, we've had three. One of them was written by me.
I have not written one. I guess I could.
So that's two. And I realize that we don't have a huge audience, but I look at the downloads and it's more than two. So we'd love to get a little more interaction, and it really helps us, keeps us strong in the spirit, especially right out here on the desert island.
Right, exactly.
Uh-huh. I mean, you already heard about all the things Jen can't eat, and I don't know where we're going to find, gluten-free bagels on this island.
Yeah,
but
I know, yeah.
All right, so a couple other things before we get out of here. You had something that you wanted to go over, and I'll let you explain.
Okay, so we've been bringing you things from Bubble WS where the language is creative in some ways. And, you know, that's what spawned the Undervolt, right? Electroman, mm-hmm. Undervolt, things like that. So we're getting interesting things from that.
Oh, wait a minute. Before we go on, didn't you have a thing to read from Twitter regarding that?
Do I have a thing? Oh, I do. Yeah. Oh, I almost forgot. Okay. So I do. Yesterday, actually, I woke up because one of the lovely neighbors here had a large truck in his driveway, and it was a tile and grout truck, and it had a generator going, and it was loud, and it just woke me up, and I just couldn't handle it, right? So I wrote a haiku on Twitter, like I do, right? I complained in the form of a haiku on Twitter. So I wrote, large generator, too much electricity, too close, woke me up. Okay, so that was my complaint. And Nathan had an excellent response to it that just made my day. His response was, Electric Man and Undervolt strike again.
Yeah, well done.
So that was awesome. That was really cool.
Okay, so what's the other thing you have?
Okay, so the other thing I have is actually a spam email instead. So it's not exactly a bubble thing, but the language, man. Oh my goodness. Okay. So I get this thing from someone I've never heard of, and the top line reads, enhance your online traffic and social media presence. So you know right away this is not friend or family, right? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, immediately. And it starts out with dear, and it has a website in there. The website is not mine. Okay.
So you know it's legit.
It is not mine. It is not Sean's. It is nothing anywhere close to anything the two of us have done or one of us individually has done. Not even close. It's a website that I was loosely associated with a long time ago for a little piece of a larger project. Okay? It's like totally not even mine. Yeah. All right? I don't even know how they attached this to this email. I'm not even sure, but some spammer here found it, right? So dear website that is not yours.com. Okay? And the first one is, I would like to take a few minutes from your schedule to ask for your attention towards internet marketing for your website. Website is capitalized. Internet is capitalized.
Okay. So those are proper nouns. Well,
yeah. Website? Yeah, come right on. But in the next, he's got another sentence coming up where he's got website not capitalized. So you can't even, you know, as a business owner, business is not capitalized, but owner is, you know. Mm-hmm. You might be interested to gain profit by placing your website among top in search engines. Among top in search engines.
Okay.
Your website needs immediate improvement for some major issues with your website. Well, first issue is it's not my website, okay? Well,
wait a minute. Your website needs improvement
your
with major issues?
Your website needs immediate improvement for some major issues with your website.
So, to clarify, that's not our website needs improvement with major issues with our house.
I guess.
Our website needs improvement with our website.
I don't know what he's thinking, you know. First improvement, it's not mine. Go find someone else, you know. All right. So they've listed some things, right? So apparently the website that he's referring to here, it has low online presence for many competitive keyword phrases. Okay, sure. whatever. What does that even mean? You know, unorganized social media accounts. Okay. Explain what an unorganized social media account is. Not compatible with all mobile devices. Did you test them? I
mean, right. Which all devices did you actually
test? Did you look it up, this website that is not mine that you claim is? Did you like look it up on an iPad and an iPhone and an Android and a BlackBerry? And I mean, I don't know. Then it says many bad backlinks to your website. What's a backlink exactly?
Well, that is other websites that link to you. And this
so now
is,
it's your fault that the other websites right, have linked to you are bad. If, I mean, what the
as
hell?
If that's something, as if that's something that anybody could control unless they themselves are the ones actually generating the backlinks. You know
yeah,
what I, mean?
I mean, it's just stupid, you know. So it goes on from here. And obviously, I'm not responding to this guy. I might write a snarky little blog about him. But, you know. Yeah, so he's going into stuff. And he's like, looking at the above issues and other additional improvements for your website, I would request you to give us a chance to fix those issues. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know? Sounds legit.
Well, let's see. You can't fix the backlinks. We know that. I don't know what you're going to do to make our unorganized social media accounts organized. That seems kind of nebulous right there. Not compatible with all mobile devices. Well, what exactly are you going to do for me for that? You know? What are you going to do?
I mean, some of these things, you know, they could have arguably some actual proper fixes. But
not the backlinks, really, you know?
This is all...
And the low online presence for many competitive keywords. He's talking about SEO. I've right. done SEO for some clients. I know how it works. You'd have to rewrite everything to match, like, this little pattern, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, what, are you going to rewrite everything? Whose website is it now? You know?
Yeah, it's just stupid.
Yeah, and he goes on, our team of search engine and social media experts... Search engine, experts. Social media, those are capitalized. Experts is not. So,
okay.
Are here to serve you with best inputs.
Best inputs.
Well,
I'd rather have the best inputs than the worst inputs, I guess.
Yeah, and it goes on. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here. You will feel the difference once you get services from our company. Whoa. As we never let our clients' expectations go down. Now, what are you telling me? You know, exactly.
So we went from best inputs to servicing you and going down.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Then it says this is interesting too. Being at the top left of Google, the top left of Google, and then it says in parentheses, number one to number three organic positions is the best thing you can do for your company's website traffic and online reputation. The top left of Google? I've never heard anyone refer to Google as, oh, you want to be on the top left
of
Google.
Top left.
What is that?
It almost sounds like they've got, you know, a layout of the entire internet.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be to the top left of Google.
Right. You know, yeah. Like, I don't know.
There's Google. Just... And then, you know, off to the top right of Google is, you know, Facebook or something. But you want to be to the top left of Google.
Yeah, it's weird. And this is one of my favorite sentences. You'll be happy to know that my team is willing to guarantee you first page Google ranking for your targeted local keyword phrases. Because you can do that. You can be a company and you can offer that you're going to magically get this person's website at the top of Google, because that happens. You totally have control over that. Right. Yeah. You know, total crap, right? And yeah, so then he says, if my proposal sounds, S-O-U-N-D apostrophe S, if my proposal sound is good, right?
Yeah.
If my proposal sound is interesting for your business goal, I don't know, what do you think my business goal is? Feel free to email us, or you can provide me with your phone number and the best time to call you. Oh, that's not happening.
Yeah, if only we still had that voicemail line.
Yeah, really. I am also available for an online meeting to present you this website audit report. So what on earth, what is this website audit report thing? You're digging around in this website that doesn't belong to me anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what the hell? The best part of this letter is at the end after his name and where you can contact him and all that crap. He says, P.S. I am not spamming.
Yeah. Anytime that you have to qualify your message as not spam,
it's
you're
spam.
Spamming.
Yeah. Continues with, I have studied your website and believe I can help you with your business promotion. He has studied this website but hasn't figured out it ain't mine.
Yeah, he studied it real hard.
This last sentence is great. If you still want us not If you still want us to not contact you, you can ignore this email or ask to remove and I will not contact again. If you still want us to not contact you.
If you still want us
the mind.
To not contact you. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll probably be writing a snarky little blog post about him somewhere. Taking out, of course, the name of this website that has nothing to do with me, you know, and it's just ridiculous. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's probably enough for this week, that's unless you got enough. Anything else.
I don't think so. No, that's it, man.
Okay, well, thank you for listening. This has been Hyper Nonsense. You can find us online at hypernonsense.com. That is our web. You can email us show@hypernonsense.com. We'd love to hear from you. And you can find us on Twitter @hypernonsense. You can go to hypernonsense.com/subscribe and you can see all the different ways you can subscribe to our show. And I don't mention this enough, but we do have an option on the site where if you want to subscribe through email, you can totally do that. So if you want to get alerted to show updates, if you just drop your email address in there and confirm it, then anytime we put out a new show, you'll just automatically get an email. So that's pretty handy. And we're not using that to build some kind of list or newsletter or anything.
You won't get email that says, I am not spamming. If you still want us to not contact right. you can ignore this email. We will not be putting that in.
Yeah. That system is in place just so you can get the latest show updates in your email if that's easier than any other option. And on that same subscription page, we do have all of our contact methods as well. And as mentioned earlier, hypernonsense.com/iTunes. We'd love to get some more iTunes reviews, and we will read them on future shows. So I think that'll be it for this week. And thanks again so much for listening. By the way, didn't mention it, but we've officially crossed over into double digits with this episode.
Woohoo!
So well done to us for saying we would do one show a week and pretty much sticking to that. I think we have. So.
I think pretty close, yeah. If not, pretty close.
So thanks again, everybody, and with any luck, we'll be back with you next week.
Bye, people.
I got a pro tip for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to record
mm-hmm.
in your software, you should have the actual device you want to record with selected.
That's a good plan. Mm-hmm. Yes.